Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Leo Brody. I'm the practitioner, one of the practitioners for today, and I'm joined by Wanda. I don't know. Mary, right. Sorry about that. My teleprompter isn't working. So right now, we're going to turn within just for a moment. Turn within to that presence that is always within us. That is the spirit of oneness, the spirit of truth, the spirit of love that we can always remember whenever we want is here within us. And we turn within to that knowing that we are supported, that we can always rest in that presence and know that everything that we need comes to us when we open our eyes to see it and receive it. And so I know that this service is blessed, this service is beautiful, and so it is.
So if you are following along, all year we've been speaking about living beautifully. And last month it was wholehearted living in a broken-hearted world, and our last month is literally living beautifully, talking about that. And the actual whole title when I started the year was Living Beautifully in the Midst of Change and Chaos. It seemed a little long and also foreboding. and once I realized I was going to be transitioning and retiring, it was like, no, let's just do Living Beautifully. So the first topic of the month is our fundamental goodness. And, you know, when we can relax. Can you relax? I have trouble relaxing sometimes lately. But when we can fully relax into ourselves and work with the dynamic quality of impermanence that we have going on in this world all the time, when we can relax and do that, we can drop into our fundamental nature, which in the Science of Mind teachings is goodness. So we believe that we didn't come into this life either as a blank slate. Any of you parents? Parents? Was your child a blank slate? I had four, and no, not any of them were the same, and none of them came in just waiting for me to tell them what to do. Not a single one. So we don't think that. We also don't adhere to a theology of any sort, actually, but particularly a theology that says that we were born in original sin. We think that's actually kind of ridiculous. And so we don't think that, but what we do understand is that in every sacred human, there is a divine spark. You can think of it in many ways. For example, thinking about how we're connected in the universe, you can understand that we're riding on a planet whose core is fire and whose life is given by a giant fireball. And so it makes perfect sense that we're divine sparks. You know what I'm saying? But taking that a little deeper, we also understand that Every single being, any sentient life at all, contains that spark of the divine, is literally a manifestation of the infinite one, whatever you want to call that. And the other interesting thing for us is that if you were at the Q&A last week, someone asked the question about, does Science of Mind believe in reincarnation? And it's such an interesting answer because I've been in this tradition for 40 years. And so I got into it just as all the old timers who had created it were dying off. And they were still fighting about that. I'm like, you know, I was a hippie at the time. I'm like, of course we believe in reincarnation. But the difference was that some people believed that we had life after life after life after life, like in a sequence. And other people believed that actually it's all happening at the same time, because the understanding is that time and space is a gentleman's agreement, if you will, that it's not actually real. We just pretend it is, and then we all act like it is, right? And so at that point, when I heard those two arguments, I'm like, same, same. Who cares, you know? So we do believe, actually, in the ongoingness of our evolutionary divine being. And so we believe that, yes, we're located in a personality self right here, but that within us is something that is eternal, that is always and ever expanding, and that is moving us in the direction of our goodness, of our fundamental goodness all the time. So what this has to do with living beautifully, for me, is understanding that actually we came in to this particular time-space continuum already loaded with what we had been evolved into up to that point. And that divine spark, that fire in us, came in as like a seed. And the seed of that divinity, that understanding, doesn't crack open unless we work with it. You know, and so we can live our whole life focused entirely on our personality self. What that would mean, at least for me personally, I don't know about you, is a lot of unhappiness. Because at the personality level of our experience, you may have noticed, it's not easy. It's all over the map. We have good days, we have bad days, we have really, really bad days, we have really, really joyous days, and we get really, really, really attached at the personality level to the good and not the bad. And so we suffer. Have you noticed that? So when things are going really bad, we're suffering. When things are going really good, we're afraid that they're going to go really bad. And so often we suffer then too. And so, you know, the trick of the spiritual path, it's not really a trick, it's the beauty of a spiritual path, whatever your path is to be landed in a different place in this lifetime than just the personality. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the personality. You know, and you have one and I have one and they're charming, mostly. There's a few people who haven't figured the charming part out. But there's something more. And it's only when we begin to engage that, that seed of divinity that we are, with the purpose, the intention that we carried forward into this space-time continuum, begins to express itself more fully. It's trying. But until we really engage it, it's like over here in the corner going, you actually were here for a different purpose than buying things on Amazon. Hello? Black Friday doesn't actually exist in the spiritual realm. You know, so we work with it. And so for me, understanding this very basic concept, I'm sure you've all encountered something, some idea like this along the path, it's important to understand like what we're trying to do here. What are we actually doing here? And yeah, the personality self is in charge of making money and creating safety and having a place to live and food and the survival things. That's the personality level. And it's also involved in community. It wants to be in community. No sacred human I know, really, even the most introverted, can live without some form of connection to others. And so the personality self is involved in generating this lifetime and what we do with it. When we add that spark, we begin to have a whole different experience of all of that and so much more. And so I would imagine if I was sitting in the audience, I'd be thinking, well, okay, I probably have already connected with my divine spark, but let's say I have a neighbor who hasn't, obviously, and I want to help them on their spiritual path. What would I do? First of all, don't talk to them. But second of all, if they asked you, and only if they asked, you could say that the way this divine spark is ignited in this lifetime is through the imagination. Believe it or not. That the imagination is our tool for moving from just living an outer life and invoking this deeper sense of self and purpose and meaning. And so what does that mean? Well, you know, I was thinking about how to talk about that. And, you know, I've told the story so many times I'm reluctant to tell it, so I'll just give you the Reader's Digest version. I'm old enough to remember those. So Michael Mead tells a story, and I'm sure you've heard it. It's a wonderful story about there's a place in the world that people try to find all the time, and it's so hidden that no matter where they look, it's very, very difficult to find. And what this place is this incredible cave that's hidden away, and in that cave is an old, old, old woman, way older than me, centuries old, and she has been knitting the most beautiful garment in the world for as long as she can remember. And at her side, I now appreciate this story even more, is a black dog. And at the back of the cave, at the far back of the cave, her other duty is to stir the seeds of all possibility that the world could manifest. And so every once in a while, she gets up from her chair, moves very slowly, because she's centuries old, to the back of the cave and stirs the seeds so that all the seeds of possibility are made available to sacred humans everywhere. So one day, she is almost complete with this garment. And she's been working on it for so long that she's now just at the trim. And so she's been biting off porcupine quills with her teeth, and so they're all down to nubs, and then weaving those porcupine quills into the trim of this beautiful, beautiful garment. It's glorious. And she's so intent on that that she forgets about the seeds for a minute, and then all of a sudden she remembers. So she, as much as she could, she leaps up from the chair, puts the garment down, and moves to the back of the cave to stir the seeds. Well, the dog, for whatever reason, becomes curious about this garment and goes over while she's in the back and starts smelling the garment and finds a loose thread and thinks that it would be really interesting to pull on the thread. And before she can come back, that dog has pulled apart the entire creation. And she comes back. This is the main point of the story. She comes back and she's stunned that this incredible, beautiful thing that she was creating for who knows how long is now in a pile of yarn and porcupine quills and other things. And she stands there for a minute, and she looks up, and she gets this huge smile on her face. And she sits down and begins to weave together the next most beautiful, even more beautiful garment that she's now created in her mind. And this is the power that you and I have. Some of you have actually deeply experienced this. If you've gone through a change of life where a job ends or a beloved partner dies or leaves, or you've moved from one place to another, whether you wanted to or not, you're at the place where the woman was standing there and everything that was created is now in a pile, in moving boxes for some. And yet we move on. And the way we move on, this is the piece I want to pull out of that story, is that place where the imagination comes in. And even in the midst of destruction or despair or fear or whatever the personality self is experiencing, the deeper self sees the opening for something even more incredible and opens to that. And as that is invited in, all of a sudden everything transforms again into possibility. And this literally is how we walk in the world when we're connected to the deeper self. Because the nature of this planet, the nature of our bodies, the nature of our relationships is about impermanence. Things are constantly changing. And as they change, the personality self wants to cling and be attached. I was thinking, I was preparing this talk this morning, I was thinking about this really difficult part of the documentary. I don't know if you saw the documentary about Jane Goodall. How many of you saw that? Wow. It was an eye-opener for me. And one of the parts that was most difficult for me was this mother chimpanzee had had this baby, and the baby became unnaturally attached to the mother, which I didn't know happened in the animal world. And so the mother, you know, she's humoring this kid as she's going along, but, you know, it's like honor and wanting her to feed it and wanting her to do everything. And eventually she has another one, and this one gets jealous and she's pushing it away because it wants to nurse and the other one's nursing. And so the documentary goes on watching this very, very unnaturally attached chimpanzee, and the mother dies, and that chimpanzee climbs up into a nest it had made in a tree and dies, refuses to eat until it dies. I was so disturbed by that for so long because it's like, oh my God. And I finally had to ask myself, okay, what is it about that? And I was like, well, there's a part of me that's like that, you know? There's a part of me that's very attached to the things that I've created and very attached to the people that I love and very attached in various ways. And it forced me to say, wow, where am I like that? Where am I like that? And what it takes to let go at a deeper level is this imaginative, creative mind that we have at our disposal all the time. And one of the most interesting things to me about utilizing that to live into the spiritual path is that that's where our purpose actually resides. That's where we actually know, without actually knowing, but know at a heart level who we are and what we're meant to bring into the world. And I think only living from that place do we escape the rounds of suffering that we experience at the personality level to a certain extent. Oh, we feel it. I mean, when someone I love dies, someone recently just died, and it was tragic and it was horribly sad, and I was very, very sad about it. And I could also lean into that creative mind, knowing for myself, what am I to do in this situation? And knowing for the other person that they're an evolving soul. And as much as I think they should be here, they had a different plan going on, and so they left. And I don't mean that flippantly. I mean, you know, I really do think that our soul has an agenda here. And that divine spark we share inside of us is part of the agenda. So there's a myth that Michael Mead speaks about in Awakening the Soul that I found really interesting on this topic, or at least this is my closing point. He talks about one of the greatest scenes in all mythology, which appears in depictions of the deceased person arriving in the other world and entering the hall of Maat, the goddess of truth. This is in Egypt. In ancient Egypt, Maat personified the concepts of truth, justice, and order in the world. The quintessential symbol of Maat was a single ostrich feather known as the feather of truth. Right after a person died, their heart would be placed on one side of a scale to be weighed against the single feather of Mott. If a person had lived a life that was in tune with their own soul, their heart would be unburdened and thus would be light enough to be in balance with the feather of truth. If that were the case, the person had realized the nobility of their soul and could pass on to the afterlife. On the other hand, if the heart of the deceased was heavily burdened because they had not lived out their soul life intended, had done serious harm, or simply died with too many unfinished issues, their soul's burdens would outweigh the feather of truth. In that case, a strange creature named the Devourer would consume the burdened heart, and the deceased would have to go back and begin life over again. In Egyptian myth, the heart was the key to both life on earth and life hereafter. And, you know, for me, that was a very poignant way of speaking to this thing where we come in already with so much to bring and a purpose in taking form in this particular time and space continuum. But as we come in, we're sort of forgetful of that. And it takes us a while, usually, but not everybody, to kind of awaken to the fact that we actually are here to bring something, that we're actually, I would put it this way, that we're actually a gift at this particular time and space. And then once we have been told that, then the job for all of us is to figure out, well, what is that? What have I brought? I'm not aware of it. I don't know me in that way. Now, there are exceptions to this rule. Every single enlightened person that I've read about or encountered, including the great masters that we always hear about, you know, Buddha and Jesus and Lao Tzu and all those folks, all of them, I suspect, came into their spark earlier than some of us. Some were actually born not forgetting at all. And most were sort of moved along for whatever reason into a full awakening before we even were kind of like, I might be here for some reason, which for me happened like late teens, early 20s. The point is, the way through this, the way to touch in deeply to who we are and what we're bringing is through our imaginative gifts, is through our creative mind, is through the place where we don't allow ourselves to be so stopped by our attachments, so trapped by them, so caught in the cycle of suffering, that we can actually use the capacities we've been given to dream our life into something much deeper, much more meaningful, much more purpose-driven, and also just more fun. Because the suffering doesn't have the same hook. It's there, but it's not, we're not caught in it anymore. We're the old woman. Sad, but then, oh, an opportunity here. So I don't know where you are. I have a feeling some of you are at the garment being destroyed place. I know several of you who are now in the creative process of like, oh, I could actually do life differently. And so as a community, we're also there. We're like, oh, what we have been doing is going to change. But what could we do as a community? Almost anything. You guys are so incredibly great and so good together. You could do almost anything. So I'm excited for all of us to move into the next creative stage. So I'll do a prayer for your creative stage and mine, and then we'll move into the rest of our day. Within me, And within every sacred human lies the seed of perfection, the indwelling presence, the divine spark, waiting to fire us through our imagination into a life that we've only thought about in our dreams. And now I know for myself, and I know for you, that awakened to that possibility, the sky is the limit. Indeed, there is no limit for what I can do and you can do connected to that divine presence within. And so I invoke that, knowing that it holds the truest sense of who I am at the deepest level of purposeful gifting into the world. And I allow my mind and my heart to blaze with inspiration, creativity, and the willingness to move forward free to create exactly that. As I open my mind and heart, new thoughts, new ideas, new people, new circumstances, new opportunities begin to arrive. And as I continue to hold my attention on the creation of this life, I say yes, and yes again, and yes again, and allow myself to be pulled in the direction of this creative power that is moving me. And in this way, my life is transformed. I am opened and deepened, and I am able, at a level never experienced before, to bring forward the gifts that I have brought. And this is not only a blessing that I can bestow, but it is a blessing bestowed on my personality self and on this lifetime that I'm living. My heart is light as a feather, and I am gifted by this opportunity again and again. So I am deeply grateful and really excited. And so it is.